Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, tonight, we got another Day of the Clown Show. You know, the framers of the Constitution were very clear about what needed to be done to impeach the president. Show by evidence a high crime or misdemeanor. So far, we've got what I think and maybe, and I hate Trump, and for that reason, he needs to be out of office. I mean, it's just been one mess from the beginning. Now, the special counsel is supposed to determine did a crime get committed. He said no. But Schiff says, oh, it's right there in front of you. You just got to look for it. So after over 2 years and tens of millions of dollars, he's having another investigation. And now that it's come out that some of his staff apparently took money from Ukraine, and the Russia hoax being over, we now have the Ukraine hoax. And in Pelosi's son, and when somebody asked her about that, she just had a fit. And she was asked, did she hate Trump? And she said, I'm Catholic. I can't hate. Some of the worst haters I've ever known were Catholic. Well, what they've done is created a new way to get rid of a president you don't like. You just make stuff up. So what they're going to find with the next Democratic president, he may or she may face the same thing. They went in not looking for guilt or innocence. They went in saying, you're guilty, now we just have... We know what you did. We just got to see if there's evidence that you did it. Oh, we don't have evidence? Well, we just have allegations. That's okay. Allegations equal guilt. Well, we've been talking about the Kennedy assassination. The Warren Commission, which the government pointed to and said, see, we did a thorough investigation. The Warren Commission was created by Lyndon Johnson to do one thing and one thing only, legitimize the change of power. See, in most countries, around the world. Regime change happens with an assassination. So the theory was the same thing happened here. So Oswald got Earl Warren and said, look, prove it was a lone nut gunman. Not prove who killed the president. Prove it was a lone nut gunman. See, this country's never had a conspiracy. It's always a lone nut. No matter what the evidence says, it's a lone nut. Because we don't have conspiracies to assassinate our leaders. We just have lunatics. So, in fact, there was a memo from J. Edgar Hoover to LBJ found shortly after Oswald's arrest saying, case closed. And the fact that Oswald was a contract CIA agent and himself was hushed up, and the FBI did everything it could to enter an investigation in Dallas. Secret Service stole the body and violated state law, but that's okay. Did it for a good cause. Didn't want to upset Jackie. Now, nowhere in the state law at the time did it say murders are not going to be investigated and autopsies aren't going to be held because we don't upset the president's wife. Well, let's look at some of the other witnesses or potential witnesses who met an early death because of this debacle. Interestingly enough, after Ruby was arrested, nobody went and searched his apartment for any evidence. They did talk to his roommate, and the roommate talked to Ruby's attorney, his first attorney, named Tom Howard. From all accounts, quite a effective attorney. But Ruby's brother railroaded him out in favor of Melvin Belli, who, by all accounts, was not the brilliant legal mind that his publicity said he was. He and the roommate and two reporters were the first ones to go through the apartment. Went through it on November 24th, before the police got there. Well, when you know it, he died of a heart attack in March of 1965. Now, interestingly enough, and I wasn't the first one to bring this up, the CIA, prior to that time, had developed what was referred to as the heart attack gun. It was an ice-encapsulated dose of shellfish toxin. The gun was spring-loaded, and the point was so fine that it could penetrate, and you might not even feel it. It would penetrate clothing. It'd just be a little red mark. The ice would melt, the shellfish toxins in your system, and it mimics a heart attack. Then there's Hank Suidam. He was in charge of Life magazine stories on the Kennedy assassination and had possession of the Zapruder film, which was locked away by Life magazine for about 5 years. I didn't want anybody to see it. Wouldn't know he died of a heart attack in December of 66. Joe Brown. He was the judge in Jack Ruby's trial. Or if you want to call that fiasco a trial. He died of a heart attack in 66 as well. It's interesting. A lot of people died in 1966. Then there's David Ferry. Now, he was quite a character. Lived in New Orleans. He was going to be a witness called by Jim Garrison. He was a sometimes pilot for the mob, sometime pilot for the CIA, deeply involved in anti-Castro Cuban operations. He was also involved in the CIA biocancer weapon development program, and he knew Oswald very well. And yes, the CIA developed a way to instill cancer in someone. Ruby claimed that he had been injected with cancer cells by a doctor that he didn't know when he was having a medical problem. The jail brought in a doctor he didn't know, not the doctor he asked for. Now, Dave Ferry worked part-time for Guy Bannister Detective Agency, which turned out to be nothing more than a front organization for the U.S. intelligence agencies. Guy Bannister's former FBI. His office was in a building that actually had an entrance on two different streets. He used one address for his office mail. The other address was on the Fair Play for Cuba committee flyer that I was handing out. The Secretary Guy Bannister, Delphine Roberts, stated that Ferry and Oswald were frequent visitors to the Bannister office in 1963. Ferry was also high up in the Civil Air Patrol and was in charge of a young Oswald when he joined up as a teenager. Now, interestingly enough, evidence shows that on the day of the assassination, Ferry took a strange trip by car in a driving rainstorm from New Orleans to Houston, where he stayed near a payphone waiting for a phone call. After he got the call, he drove back to the Texas coast and back to Houston. He was arrested by the FBI a few days after the assassination. Another investigator that worked for Guy Bannister by the name of Jack Martin told reporters Ferry was involved in the Kennedy assassination, but he didn't produce proof to back it up. And there were rumors that Oswald had Ferry's library card on him at the time of his arrest. Now, a lot of researchers believe that Ferry's five-hour car trip in a rainstorm the night of the Kennedy assassination to Houston was likely a trip Ferry took to gain possession of his library card. He was also found dead in his apartment. Shortly after he was subpoenaed to appear, in fact, it was February 22nd, 1967, just before his arrest by Jim Garrison. The death was ruled a suicide, but the autopsy did not confirm that. Now, Jim Garrison was a district attorney in New Orleans who had Ferry under investigation, and he'd become convinced Ferry was involved in the Kennedy assassination in Dallas and had a lot to do with setting up Oswald as the patsy. Garrison was days away from arresting Ferry. He was making sure his case would stand up. The third week of February of 1967, a New Orleans State's newspaper broke a story about Ferry and his relationship to the Garrison investigation. Ferry was telling people because of that story printed in the newspaper, he was a dead man. Well, he was correct. Well, upon David Ferry's death, there was a whole series of photos taken of his apartment. Coroner's office did not understand a great deal about the Kennedy assassination, took a photo of rifles that were in Ferry's house. There were two in particular that looked very much like the rifles that was found on the sixth floor in the school book depository. Now, Ferry continued to deny that he knew Oswald, even though he was in several photographs with him. One of Ferry was also a part-time private investigator. One of his clients was Carlos Marcello, the mob boss for the southeastern part of the United States. The mob boss that Robert Kennedy had grabbed off the streets and deported. Illegally, but effectively. Then there's Eladio Del Valle, a Cuban exile who worked in the Anti-Castro movement. He was a friend of David Ferry and was known to have been working for Santo Traficante, the Florida crime boss. Garrison was trying to find him and interview him in relation to Ferry and the Kennedy assassination. But Garrison never got a chance to talk to him. Soon as word got out that he was looking for Del Valle, Del Valle was found murdered in Miami on the same day that Ferry died, February 22nd, 1967. Police report indicated Del Valle was tortured, shot through the heart at point blank range, and had his skull split open with an axe. It was very hard for the coroner or the police to claim that it was suicide, but there was an initial effort. But then once the report came out, they gave up. It was murder. Still hadn't been solved. Then there's Charles Nicoletti, mobster and hitman from Chicago. Nicoletti was suspected of at least 20 mob hits during his lifetime. And he was named as one of the gunmen that fired shots in a Deltex building by both Johnny Roselli and James Files, also known as James Sutton. Nicoletti had been summoned to appear before the House Select Committee on Assassinations, but prior to arriving to give his testimony, he received three .38 caliber slugs in the back of his head while he sat in a car parking lot in North Lake, Illinois. Made it difficult for him to testify. Then there's David Sanchez Morales. Now, keep in mind that all the names I'm giving you were either ignored by the Warren Commission, were subpoenaed by Jim Garrison, but never had the chance to testify, or were subpoenaed by the House Select Committee on Assassinations, but never had the chance to testify. Now, Morales was an agent of the CIA involved in executive action, which was a series of programs that overthrew various governments around the world. Frankly, he was an assassin. Involved in the overthrow of the democratically elected president of Guatemala, Jacobo Arbenz Guzman. Morales was involved in both JM Wave and Z Rifle, which were CIA plots to assassinate Fidel Castro. Worked with Johnny Roselli and David Atlee Phillips, suspect in connection to the Kennedy assassination. And there are claims that he was seen with Oswald in New Orleans in various bars and clubs. E. Howard Hunt, on his deathbed, named Morales as one of the agents within the CIA who had operational oversight of some of the aspects of the Kennedy assassination in Dallas. In May of 78, Morales made a trip to Washington concerning an upcoming congressional investigation he was going to have to testify in. When he came back to his home base of Arizona, his friend noticed he didn't look all that well. That night, he was taken to the hospital. The next day, he was dead. His wife insisted there be no autopsy. Then there's William Guy Bannister. Originally a career agent of the FBI, Bannister ended up as the head of the Chicago field office. Retired from the FBI in 54. 55, he became assistant superintendent of the New Orleans Police Department, but that didn't last long. Suspended for pulling a gun out in a bar and threatening a bar employee. Well, he then opened what looked like a private investigative agency in New Orleans, but the agency didn't seem to have much private detective work. According to Jack Martin, the investigator handled most of the private investigative work. Instead, Bannister's detective agency, according to Martin, was a front operation involved in the Cuban anti-Castro movement. Bannister was known to be monitoring and keeping files of communists on college campuses, as well as deeply involved in Cuban exiles' attempts to overthrow the Castro government. And Oswald's Fair Play for Cuba Committee pamphlets had the agency address of 544 Camp Street stamped on it. The flyers, according to Delphine Roberts, that Oswald passed out was some sort of thing that Bannister had Oswald set up, because Oswald was working with and for Bannister. Now, Delphine Roberts also stated both David Ferry and Oswald worked at the agency from time to time. Most of the checks that came to the Bannister Detective Agency came from Remington Rand Corporation that was long ago exposed as a major CIA front. The House Select Committee on Assassinations uncovered that. Bannister died of a coronary thrombosis, June 6, 1964. Let's talk about Rolando Masfera, newspaper publisher born in Cuba. When Castro came to power, he fled to Miami, Florida, with rumors of having about $10 million under his control. Masfera got involved in attempted assassinations and coups of Cuba and had links to both Florida crime boss Centro Traficante and Alpha 66, which was the group that organized and launched the Bay of Pigs invasion. Bishop, also known as a CIA agent, Hoffa gave Masfera $50,000 as a retainer and expense money to set up the Kennedy assassination. October 31st, 1975, Rolando Masfera was found in his car in Miami, dead after it was exploded with dynamite that somebody wired to the ignition. Now, Jimmy Hoffa was president of the Teamsters Union and a man Bobby Kennedy put behind bars. They had extensive criminal and organized crime links. He had said to several people, including Frank Rugano, that he was part of the Kennedy assassination. And there are several accounts of him having meetings with both Santos Traficante and Carlos Marcello. Now, Richard Nixon, for some reason, ordered Hoffa to be paroled. After he got out, and just before the House Select Committee on Assassination served him notice to appear to testify, he vanished. Coincidence? Well, somebody didn't want him to talk because he's never been seen since. Then there's William Colby, who made the comment that the CIA owns everybody of any significance in the news media. Now, Colby became director of the CIA when President Nixon appointed him to the directorship. 1995, both houses of Congress set up hearings on the activities of the CIA. Colby was trying to clean up their act and handed over a lot of national security covert action secrets that became public. Well, because of testimony he gave to Congress, former CIA director Richard Helms was indicted for perjury. Gerald Ford, when he came to power, fired Colby as CIA director. After his retirement, Colby wrote his memoirs. It was called Honorable Men. After the book was published, he was forced to pay out an undisclosed out-of-court settlement for making unauthorized disclosures in his book. Somebody didn't like it. Now, if you got comments, the number is 267-521-0159. You're listening to The Ken Hudnall Show. Now, the story goes that Colby went on a night canoe trip from his home after dark and fell overboard and drowned. Now, most folks believe he was murdered because dead witnesses can't talk. Called his wife the night of his supposed late night canoe ride and told her he was tired and going to fix dinner and go to bed. His wife was on a trip to Houston. He was home alone. But according to the official story, and interestingly enough, investigators repeated this with a straight face. Instead of fixing dinner, going to bed, as he told his wife, he went for a nighttime canoe ride and fell in the water. Of course, since it was clearly an accident, there was no thorough investigation. Man's former head of the CIA, but his death is not really investigated seriously. Well, then we have Bill Chester, friend of Jack Ruby. He told several folks that Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald were friends. No formal testimony was ever taken. The Warren Commission didn't want to talk to him. And he couldn't be called to testify for anything else because he died of a, wait for it, heart attack in March of 1964. Let's talk about Leonard Pullen. Pullen was a Navy employee who helped put together a film on the last 2 days of John Kennedy's life. He had a one-car automobile accident in 1967, died. No autopsy. Philip Garassi. He placed Lee Harvey Oswald and Clay Shaw together in a conversation during the Garrison investigations. In August of 1968, accidentally, of course, he electrocuted himself and died. No autopsy. Death was declared an accident. Then we got Thomas Davis, a gun runner and friend of Jack Ruby. Now, it turned out Jack Ruby had quite a checkered past. He'd run guns into Cuba as well. Well, Davis also electrocuted himself and died in September 73. No autopsy, just an accident. Now, this is next one is one that raised a lot of eyebrows. Now, I grew up watching late-night TV, and What's My Line was a rather famous TV show. Dorothy Kilgallen was one of the panel members. She was a famous journalist and reporter who was one of the few reporters to interview Jack Ruby alone after he shot Oswald and before he died. And when she got back to New York, she told several people, to include her publisher, she's going to break the Kennedy assassination wide open. On November 8, 1965, she was found dead in her apartment. Officially, it was ruled she died of a drug overdose. She's wearing full makeup, dressed, in the bed. And the book she was allegedly reading was upside down. Now, very few people, I've tried, it's very difficult to do, can read a book upside down. But more interestingly, her habit was to always remove her makeup before getting into bed. Even if she was going to sit in the bed and work, she removed her makeup. All of her notes from her trip to New Orleans were gone. Now, there was a close friend, almost an assistant, to whom she would give things of importance, or at least copies. That friend was found dead as well. Paul Halliwell was a CIA agent and lawyer. He was deeply involved in financing covert operations in regard to Cuba. And he was a contact person for President Kennedy with the CIA. Died of a collapsed lung. Ralph Paul. Close friend and business partner of Jack Ruby. Now, Ruby had a lot of interests. He was not, I know the Warren Commission tried to make it look like he was, very small time, but he wasn't. Paul knew things about Ruby nobody else did. Had a heart attack. Died. No autopsy. James Cadogan, FBI document examiner involved in the examination of Lee Harvey Oswald documents, had a mysterious fall at his home in 1977. Died. Death was ruled an accident. No autopsy. Karen Cooper Sinnott, TV actress who was overheard talking about Kennedy's death before he was assassinated, found dead on November 28, 1963 in her apartment. Without an autopsy, it was ruled to be a drug overdose. Hank Killam, the husband of Jack Ruby stripper named Wanda Joyce. Now, Killam worked as a painter with John Carter, a boarder at the boarding house at 1026 North Beckley Avenue when Oswald lived there. Killam had known of a Ruby Oswald connection. Killam left Dallas and moved to Pensacola, Florida, and then to Tampa, and then came back to Pensacola. He told his brother, "I'm a dead man. I run as far as I'm going to run." Found dead March 17, 1964. Nope, it wasn't a heart attack. His throat was accidentally cut, wide open. At least that's the feeling of authorities. John Garrett Underhill Jr., military intelligence officer who worked closely with the CIA. He had people talking inside the CIA that a small group of agents set Oswald up as the patsy and murdered JFK. Told his friends it had something to do with the Cubans. Then he told his friends that he feared for his life because they know that I know. On May 8, 1964, he died of a gunshot wound to the head, which was immediately ruled a suicide. Of course, he was shot behind the left ear, but he was right-handed. You ever tried to do that? In April of 2018, when they released the JFK files, some of the Underhill files were also released. Well, the problem is, after 54 years, it appears to still have information that's covered up. Now, the J. Garrett Underhill file was supposed to be 29 pages long, but it only had 2 pages in it. He told some friends, "I got to get out of the country. This country's too dangerous for me now. I got to get on a boat. I'm afraid for my life." I know who they are, and that's the problem. They know I know. And that's why I'm here. I can't stay in New York. Oswald's a patsy. They set him up. It's too much. They've done something outrageous. They've killed the president. Now, John Garrett Underhill Jr., which was his full name, was also known as Garrett Underhill and Gary Underhill. He was a captain on the General Staff, G2, during World War II, and got the Army Commendation Medal for Meritorious Service. Harvard graduate, linguist, self-taught military affairs expert. For 5 years, he was a military correspondent for Life magazine and helped make their foreign news department one of the most knowledgeable centers of military intelligence in the world. Had strong ties with and at one time worked directly for and had been as an asset for the CIA. But as I said, he was shot behind the left ear, but he was right-handed. Now, when there's a major cover-up going on, normally you find hundreds of smaller cover-ups in relation to the larger one. This appears to be one of them. I mean, the questions about the Underhill file is why this information has been withheld from the public for decades, and where's the other 20-some-odd pages? It wasn't included in the 2018 release. Then we have Hugh Ward, private investigator who worked for Guy Bannister. Knew a great deal about the inner workings of Bannister's office. He died in a mysterious plane crash in Mexico. Donald Kaler, an FBI fingerprint expert, likely worked on the Oswald fingerprint evidence. had a heart attack in October of 1977. Same month his boss had a heart attack. Both died. J.M. English, head of the FBI Forensic Science Laboratory, his department worked on Oswald's forensic evidence. Died suddenly of a heart attack, October 1977. Karen Little Lynn Carlin, a dancer who worked for Jack Ruby, the last person talked to him before he shot Oswald. She was a featured stripper at Jack Ruby's Carousel Club. Ruby went downtown and wired her $25 just before he walked into the basement of the Dallas Police Department and shot Oswald. Well, Little Lynn was interviewed by FBI agents. She was in a state of shock and highly agitated. FBI agents described her state as at a point of hysteria and highly reluctant to say anything. But after some prompting by the agents, she stated Lee Harvey Oswald, along with Jack Ruby and some other man, were involved in a plot to kill President Kennedy. And if she said anything about it, she'd be killed herself. Well, after that interview, she didn't say much else because she vanished. Sometime after the assassination, a researcher located her through his effort to convince her to meet. So she agreed to meet. On the date of the meeting, he had a telephone call from an unidentified female who stated Little Lynn couldn't make the meeting because her car broke down. Sometimes later, the same researcher learned that Karen Little Lynn Carlin had been shot in the head while sitting in her car while attempting to get to the meeting. Then there's Captain Frank Martin, Dallas police officer who witnessed Jack Ruby shooting Oswald. He told the Warren Commission, "There's a lot to be said, but probably be better if I didn't say it." Man was in good health and suddenly died of cancer. How about Marilyn Delilah Wally, another Ruby dancer? She knew of the friendship and relationship of Oswald and Ruby. She was shot to death by her husband. Accidentally, of course. Then there is William Bruce Pitzer, the man who took the autopsy photos of John Kennedy. David Dennis, a fellow naval officer of Pitzer's, has stated he saw the photographs and they didn't go along with the photos that are now in the National Archives. He said many of the photos we now see have been altered. Pitzer died of a gunshot wound that was ruled a suicide. Lieutenant Colonel by the name of Dan Marvin claims he was asked in 1965 by the CIA to conduct an operation that would involve an assassination. At first, Colonel Marvin said he'd do it, and then he found out it was an American officer by the name of Lieutenant William Pitzer. They wanted him to shoot. Pitzer was found shot. James Worrell Jr. He was a witness who saw a man fleeing from the rear of the Texas School Book Depository building minutes after the assassination. He died in a mysterious one-car accident before he could be called to testify. Then there's Harold Russell. He was a witness who saw someone other than Oswald escaping the crime scene of the Tippett murder. He was accidentally killed by a police officer during a barroom brawl. Then one of the most mysterious deaths of all involves a Dr. Mary Sherman. She was involved in cancer research in New Orleans, where they were creating a cancer bioweapon. Just before the Warren Commission started the New Orleans investigation of the assassination, she was found dead in her apartment. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, when found, her body was on fire. Dallas Deputy Sheriff E.R. Walters, and I talked about him some yesterday, helped in the search of the school book depository building. He found a .45 caliber slug that was taken by a blonde-haired man with a crew cut who identified himself as Secret Service. Walters was shot by a felon he was attempting to arrest with, along with his partner. His partner got shot in the foot. Then there's William Sullivan, the number three man in the FBI. He oversaw internal security as it related to the Kennedy assassination. Just before he was supposed to testify before the House Select Committee, he went on a hunting trip in November 1977. The person that shot him claimed he mistook him for a deer. The shooter got a charge of with a misdemeanor. Well, John Crawford, a friend of Jack Ruby and also a friend of Wesley Frazier, who gave Oswald a ride to work on November 22, 1963. He knew that Oswald and Ruby knew each other. He died in a mysterious private plane crash. Reverend Clyde Johnson, supposed to testify about the relationship between Oswald and Clay Shaw, mysteriously shot right before he was supposed to testify. Death never solved. No autopsy. James Plumeri, another mobster involved in the CIA assassination plots. He was murdered before he could be called to testify. David Yaris, close friend of Jack Ruby. It was thought he could shed light on Ruby's connection to organized crime and the fact that Ruby and Oswald knew each other very well. He was also mysteriously murdered before he could testify. William Pauley, at one time the U.S. ambassador to Brazil, well connected to both the anti-Castro movement and organized crime figures, deeply involved with covert action programs within the CIA. Well, he was never able to testify because he died of a gunshot wound. It was immediately ruled a suicide in January of 1977. The reason for his suicide? He had shingles. Let's talk about Billy Lovelady. The employee of the Texas School Book Depository Building, who the Warren Commission says was the man in the doorway of a photo taken just as the shots rang out that many people mistook for Oswald. After the Warren Commission came out, Lovelady produced a striped shirt he was wearing that day. The picture of the man in the doorway was not wearing a striped shirt. And it was probably Oswald, though we know this photo has been altered. Lovelady couldn't show any more light on the issue as he died of complications from a mysterious heart attack. Will H. Griffin, FBI agent, stated Oswald was an FBI informant. A very surprising case of cancer developed that moved remarkably fast. Secret Service agent Rufus Youngblood refused to lie as LBJ ordered him to. Like Jack Ruby, he died of a mysterious fast-acting cancer. Now, he was assigned to Vice President Lyndon Johnson. Now, Johnson lied and stated Youngblood threw himself on top of him as the shots rang out. The problem with the story is there's a photograph that shows Youngblood didn't do that. But Johnson ordered him to make that testimony at the Warren Commission. Dallas Motorcycle Patrol Officer James Cheney was riding just to the rear of the Kennedy car when the shots rang out. hit in the face with so much blood and brain matter, he thought he'd been hit. He was called to testify, but he couldn't because he had a sudden heart attack. Now, where he was riding, for him to have been hit with blood and brain matter, the shot had to have come from the grassy knoll. But that testimony was never made part of the Warren Commission report because, as I said, Cheney had a sudden heart attack. Lee Bowers, up in the railroad tower behind the picket fence. He saw cars probing the area right before the assassination. Also saw two men behind the fence and stated just as the shots rang out, a flash of light or something drew his attention to one of them. Bowers went able to amplify his account as he died in a mysterious auto accident. His family believed he'd been drugged prior to the accident. An insurance investigator who investigated the accident suspected it was murder. Later years, some of Bowers' friends who'd been close to him stated he knew more than he'd said about what took place at the behind that fence, but he was afraid to tell. One of the things that's come out from friends and families that Bowers had observed but was afraid to say in public, he actually saw two men with rifles firing shots behind the fence. Reporter Jim Cody, I talked about him last night. He was never able to give a full statement about what he saw in Ruby's apartment. He was murdered by an accidental blow to the neck. Mona Sands, a Texas employment clerk who interviewed Oswald, had another higher-paying job for Oswald and called Ruth Payne's house to tell him about it. A female on the phone stated Oswald already had a job. This was a period of time that Oswald had already started working at the Texas School Book Depository. Sands was able to give a more detailed account of the conversation because she was hit and killed by a bus. An accident, of course. The official story is that Ruth Payne gave Oswald a lead that ended up with a job at the Texas School Book Depository. How about William Whaley, cab driver who was supposed to have driven Oswald to his rooming house after the assassination? Died in a mysterious one-car accident. Officer Roger Craig, law enforcement officer of the Sheriff's Department, he stated the rifle found on the sixth floor was a German Mauser, which was clearly stamped on it. He also stated when he first saw the spent shells of the sixth floor, they were all lined up pointing in the same direction, just inches from each other. He also claimed to see Oswald run down from the School Book Depository building and get into a Nash Rambler. He talked to many for a while, but was silenced by a gunshot wound to the head that was immediately ruled a suicide. By George McGann. Another underworld figure that ended up marrying Beverly Oliver and was a friend of Jack Ruby. Kept the witness Oliver silent for many years. And he was never able to speak about what he knew about Ruby or the assassination because he was mysteriously murdered. Albert Bogard, a car salesman who gave an account of Oswald coming to the car dealership and test driving a new car, stating he's going to come into some money soon so he can buy one. But Oswald didn't know how to drive. When Bogard was going to be called to testify, they discovered he was dead. Problem is, he was supposed to have committed suicide in a cemetery. Charles Mentisana, he filmed a rifle being taken out of the School Book Depository building, which was not the Mannlicher Carcano Oswald rifle that he was supposed to have used. He was another person who had a mysterious heart attack and died. Bill Hunter. That's the other reporter I talked to about last night who was went into Jack Ruby's apartment. Nobody really knows what he could have said, because he never talked in detail. He was sitting in the police station where he was accidentally shot by a police officer and died in April of 64. Eddie Benavides, brother of a witness to the Tippit shooting, he died from a gunshot wound to the head in February 64. He was not the actual witness, but he looked enough like his brother to be his twin. They think he was shot by accident. Congressman Hale Boggs, member of the Warren Commission. After the commission released its report, Boggs protested and started to talk about the fact the report wasn't correct and that JFK was assassinated as a result of a conspiracy. Well, he was asked to come to Alaska to help work for the election of a candidate there. He and the candidate vanished on a plane flight in Alaska. Neither the wreckage of that small plane or any of the passengers have ever been found. And since it was not the back end of nowhere, they should definitely have been found. This next one I knew. In fact, he recommended me for entry into one of the service academies, Senator Richard Russell of Georgia, another member of the Warren Commission. After the commission report was issued, Russell started having doubts about the report's founding as things started to come out that weren't known during the commission investigation. Russell actually said he didn't want to serve on the commission, but claimed to have been tricked into serving on it by Lyndon Johnson. He felt that the FBI had covered up a lot of things. And he felt the FBI and the commission weren't following up on leads properly. He voiced concerns and expressed doubts that the CIA could be trusted to give the commission the full truth. He didn't believe the magic bullet theory, and stated so in numerous meetings. He wanted to originally write a dissenting conclusion to the Warren Report, but a lot of political heat was put on him. He was told he couldn't do it. He was quoted numerous times by a number of people that are saying, "We haven't been told the truth about Oswald." Well, he died January 21st, 1971, due to complications from emphysema at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. You have to wonder why anybody who disagreed with the Warren Report certainly had a limited lifespan. David Yaros, a hitman who worked for the Chicago mob and was a close associate of Jimmy Hoffa, deeply involved with several anti-Castro Cubans in Miami. He was found murdered in 1974. Apparently he knew too much. Richard Kane, another Chicago mobster who like to assassinate folks. There are many rumors he knew of a great deal and was involved himself in the Kennedy assassination. Well, before anybody could question him, he was murdered in a coffee shop in Chicago. John Paisley, CIA officer who was believed to have been working on stuff related to the Kennedy assassination, Lee Harvey Oswald, went out on his boat in 1994 and was later found shot in the head, ruled a suicide. Interestingly enough, no gun was found, but, you know, many suicides after they shoot themselves are known to go hide the gun. Ralph Sigler, Army counterintelligence officer, worked closely with the CIA in covert action in Mexico. He was said to have known of many internal files on Oswald and the Kennedy assassination. Found in a hotel room with electrical lamp wire stripped of its insulation and wrapped around his body. He was dead. His teeth were broken. His nose was broken. He had a lot of strange bruises. Official cause of death? Suicide. A very determined case of suicide. Well, Now, Jack Ruby was known to be a bagman for the mob and manager of Carlos Marcello's Dallas Strip joint, the Carousel Club. Now, after his conviction, his attorney initially pled him guilty in spite of Ruby's objections, but he was granted a new trial. He also got a new doctor while in jail, and he claimed he was being injected with cancer cells, and he died of cancer-related complications at Parkland Hospital. Now, there is documents that show that Ruby knew about the assassination of Kennedy before it happened. On November 17, 2017, JFK file release, there's an FBI report from a confidential IRS source revealing Jack Ruby had foreknowledge of the assassination by asking a friend to come and watch the fireworks with him as JFK was assassinated. The document states that Jack Ruby and the informant that had come to watch the fireworks had been standing at the corner of the Postal Annex building facing the school book depository during the time of the shooting. Well, we also have a number of other there were 91 my current information 91 potential witnesses who died, most of them of unexpected heart attacks, suicides, being mistaken by a deer as a deer, you know, things such as that. How about Mrs. Earl Smith, assistant to Dorothy Kilgallen? Now, Kilgallen was the only reporter to have interviewed Ruby and stated she was going to blow the lid off the Kennedy assassination. 2 days after her death, her assistant died. Cause of death is unknown and was never released to the public. Dr. Nicholas Chetta did the David Ferry autopsy. Refused to say what he found, but he died of a sudden heart attack. Jack Zangretti, friend of Jack Ruby's, he'd expressed foreknowledge of Ruby killing Oswald, died of a mysterious gunshot. Death remained unsolved. Secret Service agent Charles Kunkel, he protected Marina Oswald and Oswald's mother. He also helped take into protective custody both of Oswald's brothers. Heard a great deal of private conversation. He was not able to say too much about what he heard. He was in the backyard amusing himself with a putter and suddenly fell over with a heart attack. Maurice Gatlin, a pilot for Guy Bannister, and overheard a lot of secret conversations that Bannister had with various people while on the plane. Gatlin had a mysterious fall and died, and of course immediately ruled an accident because they couldn't manage to figure out how to make it a suicide. Well, we've come to the end of another show. I'll be back on Monday and we'll talk some more about inconvenient witnesses. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great weekend.